Chick-a-boy! All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. We are back! The Philadelphia Union Soccer Podcast. Find us wherever you get your podcasts, whether that be the Google Play Store, Apple Store. I don't even know where you get podcasts. I get them from Apple. Wherever you get them, Spotify, that's where you can get the Union Soccer Pod. Also, FoxPHLGambler.com is where you can find the Union Soccer Pod as well. It's our first pod of the season. The season has already started. We have a lot to talk about and not a lot of good to talk about with the Union, and we're doing it right now. My name is John Jansen, one of the hosts of this fine podcast, as well as Joe Tanzi, who also writes at the Union Soccer Blog, unionsoccerblog.substack.com.
Subscribe.
Joe, welcome to the Union season. How are we doing?
We'll get that out of the way now. Subscribe, because you guys don't want to hear us say that 15 more times. Yeah, it's kind of doom and gloom right now, isn't it? It is nothing.
We're there already.
We've already reached the 10th level of doom and gloom of the Union season, which basically is just the onset of any elimination in any competition. We replay about the same general themes about the Philadelphia Union over and over again. Everybody gets upset and the sky is falling. And look, I get it. I mean, worst loss in club history, by goals, not by emotions or magnitude, or it's probably the fifth or sixth. To be honest, it was around the 16 game, not a final. But man, that was tough last night, wasn't it? I mean, my honest take on the game, and look, we're not gonna dig into it. I wasn't gonna dig into it with a big written breakdown last night because there's really no need to. They just got their asses kicked. That is the recap, but they gave up after the second goal. You could feel it through the screen. They put a lot into that first half. The penalty, which by the way was a penalty, you look back on it and there was so much contact made by Kai Wagner. It's a PK, and you shouldn't put yourself in that situation in the first place. And we'll get to that higher point in a minute because that's kind of what I want to get to with where this team is at the moment. But the second goal just completely shot any morale that was left. I mean, was it
fragile morale to begin with? I feel like morale's I don't know. It's not to say that they haven't been confident. It's just an odd start to the season. A lot of traveling. Facing odd opponents early in the season.
Here's the thing that's hard for me to grasp here. If it's all doom and gloom, right? And the sky is falling, all that stuff. Then why did this same team, undermanned, by the way, hold the same exact team to a scoreless draw at home? Right? There's still some good within the squad. It's champagne problems at the moment with the Union, right? Because I'd say, and I used this line last year too when we got into the elimination discussion, maybe after League's Cup. There's what now, 29 teams in MLS now? 23, 24 of them would kill. Maybe 22, because everybody gets in the Champions Cup now. But I'd say 3/4 of the league would kill to be in the Union spot to be like, oh, we're lamenting another elimination. But in our bubble, that doesn't matter because the standard has been raised so impeccably high where round of 16, don't care if it's Pachuca or Alianza or Alajuelense or whatever clubs are still alive, losing in the round of 16 is just not acceptable anymore. You have to make deep cup runs in every tournament you're in because that's the expectation. Now, winning at those points is obviously a problem as well. But, yeah, it's just, to be honest with you, I personally don't think the sky is falling. And I think there's plenty of reasons why we shouldn't be concerned that this is going to be a complete failure of a season in the first place. First and foremost, literally every team makes the playoffs in MLS now. Like, how many are we at? 9?
I think 10? So. It's ridiculous.
Like, literally all you have to do is finish 9th place in your conference and you have a shot at MLS Cup.
Well, that's why the sky is not falling, because we know the Union are going to be way above.
And are the Union better than 9th in the East?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. At their best, they're better than 9th in the East. So, you still have a chance to win a trophy unless something catastrophically goes wrong. Leagues Cup is still a thing. Whatever your opinion is on that.
Zero.
I think that's
opinion.
It's a sensitive topic right now because it takes away from Open Cup.
Cool. Are the Lakers still celebrating their NBA Cup?
Their in-season tournament?
Yeah, are they still celebrating that?
I forgot that existed, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, something that we know is going to happen, but it feels like more of a burst. And I think NBA players and MLS players are going to feel it. And I think it was talked about last year.
Yeah.
Feel, man, was that worth it? Was that worth all of that extra burden and playing time to do that? But I think the Union have been.
That's a whole other topic.
That's a whole other topic. Yeah, yeah. But I just think this is part of it as well. I know you want to get farther in CONCACAF and all that, but man, this team has already been through a ton in a very short offseason, gets thrown into the fire immediately. Players are getting hurt immediately. I don't know. It just felt like a lot early on that the Union, and still trying to find their footing this season.
Personally, I think this team is in probably the worst shape.
I would agree.
It's been to start a season in a couple years. And I guess to contextualize that is, I think people see the defensive mistakes, because we'll start there because that's been the big topic at hand.
Because that's something new.
Yes. And everybody sees the mistakes and immediately goes to, well, our attack regressed last year. Now this is the year for our defense to regress. I think we're forgetting Jacob Glesnes had a sports hernia. I think we're forgetting that. I'm not going to sit here and say every one of his mistakes is because of that, but I don't think he's at 100%, and I think it shows. Jack Elliott was hurt in preseason. So you're basically trotting out there with one center back that's 100% in Damian Lowe. That matters when you play Pachuca, when you have so much reliance on this defense. And on top of that, and I know I'm going to get crucified for this one, but I think you and I are the president and vice president of the Leon Flock Appreciation Club.
Yeah, we've established that. I think we are.
We've established that very, very clearly. I am the president of all chapters in the tri-state area of the Leon Flock Appreciation Club.
Well, just think of more than just that, too. Center back's hurt. Leon Flock. Andre Blake was hurt.
Right. No, well, but Blake was fine. Blake played.
No, I know, the first, but he has been hurt this season. Yeah. You know, it's just been a lot for that defense all season long.
But I think the Flock absence actually is
huge.
It's huge. And you look at how this team is set up now. And it's not to say they can't adjust and all this stuff, but maybe it does take 7 to 10 games for them to adjust and see on film like what they're missing in the middle on the left side. And if you're kind of sacrificing a little bit of defensive work rate because Jack McGlynn has been so phenomenal on the offensive side, and he's working on the defensive stuff, and he's gotten better, no doubt about that. But there are different types of players now. And how many times have we done the Leon Flock versus Jack McGlynn? I mean, that was our topic du jour 2 years ago, where like we just kept debating.
Do you want
that
offense or defense?
Yeah. We just kept debating that.
I can already replay every single one of those conversations.
I think
in my
still
head.
Have all of the answers still in my head about that. But like that, but the difference is real. Like the balance is a little off kilter. And look, I know people are like, are not hot on Bedoya. It was the right move to start him, by the way, last night in Mexico. Because the game plan, in theory, is to get into halftime either 0-0 or 1-0, and you're in good shape, you bring on Carranza, and you go into a more attacking shape. And Bedoya at least brings that experience from within CONCACAF, and you're stabilized for 45. You wasn't going 90, but you stabilized that. Everything got thrown out the window by that second goal. Curtin mentioned that Jose Martinez was sick and couldn't continue, so that throws a wrench into everything. That's why Bedoya stayed on the field, and Martinez was sacrificed at halftime for Carranza, and then it all kind of just boils down, and lineup selection really doesn't matter because the entire team wasn't good enough. But your balance is thrown off a little bit because you're so used to Bedoya and Baeza and what they bring on the right. Now, to the credit of Quinn Sullivan and Nathan Harriel, their games have raised, and that right side really hasn't lacked anything. But the left side, you lose a little defensive oomph with no Leon Flock. And like him or hate him, because I know many people have called him useless, and why is he on the field? Well, he serves a purpose. We know what that purpose is. And if Jack McGlynn is starting in that spot, whether it be the diamond, whatever formation is thrown out there, yeah, it's part of the nuances of how this team plays together. And maybe you throw Jesus Bueno a few more starts. You know, as well as McGlynn's played, he's played pretty much almost every minute at this point. Maybe Bueno is the answer because he's more defensive minded and he still brings that offensive punch you need. Maybe not as cultured of a foot as McGlynn has, but that's an answer you can do internally. And then, I mean, how many times have we said it? You and I, we said it in the offseason. Everybody said in the offseason, the depth is a concern. Well, now we've reached that point where everything is kind of obviously spiraled downhill because of the 6-0 loss, but it kind of feels like danger time, right? Because Jim Curtin...
Danger time in what way?
That the players that are underperforming are going to continue to underperform, i.e. Daniel Gazdag,
yep.
Mikael Uwe, which, look, I'll be the president of the Mikael Uwe Appreciation Club also.
Uwe's not been that bad.
No, he hasn't. He's not no. He's not the problem.
No.
He hasn't been the problem.
Gazdag's the problem.
Yeah.
And you're
the president of the Gazdag Club.
I'm not saying he's the entire problem, but he's got to play better. Absolutely. He has to play better.
But I think we're talking about Gazdag, and then we're talking about the left side of midfield. Two very important places for connectivity within this formation, right? Within this system. Well, when all of a sudden you lose that connectivity in midfield and you're at your best in transition, you're at your best defending well and turning into those transition moves and not with possession, well, then all these issues kind of continue to spiral together, right? And I think that's where we're at right now is... Uwe's not scoring as many goals as he did in 2022, but he's put himself in the right spot. And I personally can tell, compared to last year, I can tell he feels more confident. Just talking to him and reading his body language within the locker room and being up close at training, there is a difference. I can tell. And you can tell that by the movements he's making on the field. And I think goals will come. I don't think he's probably number five on your list of concerns right now.
Yeah, because it feels like there are plenty of opportunities there, and he's the one making himself open for those opportunities. He's
right.
The one putting him in those spots. Right. I agree. I don't know. I feel like Uwe has made impacts, and it's not because everybody just wants the impact to be a crazy goal scorer and just a bunch of goals. But if I look at what Uwe is doing, and I'm seeing him stretch a defense a little bit, and he's putting himself in the right spots, he makes a good run, and it all doesn't work around him, how can I put that on him? I don't know. I see an impact. Like, there is an impact. It's not directly with a bunch of goals, but I'm seeing impact, and that's what I want to see from that kind of player. With Gazdag, I need to see a little bit more aggression, something. Really, right? Aggression beyond the ball, be making plays. I think that was when the Union were great a couple of years ago, when they were, you know, 6-0, 7-0, all these crazy numbers that they were doing, that record-breaking year. A lot of that to me was Gazdag being incredibly aggressive as a playmaker. He's not a playmaker right now. He's not making any plays. He's sometimes there. He's sometimes available in some of these attacks, but I don't think he is making enough plays and not being aggressive enough to make those plays.
Can I throw this out there as a potential? And I don't know if this is the thing, but do you think the weight of potentially being or not being in the Euro squad for Hungary is weighing on him?
He's on the Hungary squad.
Right.
I think just got announced.
Right. But I'm saying, like, I mean, we're a few months away from the Euros. Obviously, one of the biggest stages he'll ever play on. Like, do you think that's weighing on him at all? I don't know. I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it isn't. But do you think that's playing a role in things?
I'm sure it has to. The weight of that certainly has to. And I'm sure international competition in the Euros mean a lot to him.
Because he's not a clear-cut starter on that team.
No.
So, like,
so it absolutely could be weighing on it. I think also what it is, and I think we see this in all sports with a lot of players. He's been in this system for a good bit now. It's been a few years.
Mm-hmm.
He's played extremely well in it. I think sometimes guys just hit a wall. And it, not to say that it can't ever turn around in Gazdag. I imagine Gazdag's going to play better than this at some point this year.
Yeah.
I think I at least have enough evidence to know that he can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But with all players, you're in a system for so long, sometimes it's just you get caught up in the, I don't know, the monotony of it doesn't sound right, but you got to change something up.
It's up to the union and him
to kind of figure out what's going wrong, how to get him out of it, how to get him more involved, how to be more aggressive.
Yeah.
It's something that they're going to have to try to fix. I'm not saying that it's just keep playing and it's going to work at some point, but it's something they need to fix. But when they fix it, I think, you know, it could still work out very well.
He also hasn't had a single ounce of competition. Like, if he's walking in that starting 11 easily, like, he's one of the first names on the team sheet because nobody competes with him. They don't have anybody on that level. So, like, is it complacency? Is he just doing the wrong things? I sound really like Philadelphia talk radio host right now with the complacency.
Good.
Like, I feel like maybe we need to like unleash like the what if takes if sports talk radio gave a damn about soccer. Like, is Daniel?
But I think you're onto something with
complacency. Like,
it's not complacency in a bad way.
No.
Again, it's just he's been there for a while. He knows this offense, and there's got to be some type of spark to get him going again.
Do we need a spark in the marriage? Is that what we need, John Jansen?
Right, something like that. And again, complacency doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's just what happens when you're somewhere for a good bit. And you're doing the same thing, and you're in the same system.
And you play the same role.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's part of it. I'm not going to say that the Euros are hanging over him. I don't know if that's the thing. And the team has been really good with that not affecting like any international stuff. But I don't know. These guys are human. Now, I will say, we've got enough tape from this season now where if you're Jim Curtin and the coaching staff and you look at what Gazdag's doing, you just need him to go more forward. Like, it sounds like the silliest thing in the world to be like, hey, just go further towards the goal.
But I think that's the kind of adjustment. It's not a huge adjustment, like change where he's playing or anything like that, change his time, change how long he's on the pitch, none of that stuff. It's not shortening his minutes. It's not anything like that. It's a small adjustment where maybe he is a little bit more forward. It's like a baseball swing at a baseball player. I think that's maybe a good way of
putting
it.
Should we give him a standing ovation?
No.
Should we pull that gimmick out of
it? Stop it. At least he would deserve a standing ovation. Same with Trey Turner, but the other guy who's playing terribly with the Sixers doesn't deserve it. But that...
We're not saying anything positive about Tobias Harris.
We hear with guys in baseball swing. So if they're having a really good baseball player going through a really tough time, there's just something going wrong, it's just a small, it's not that you start benching them and they don't get any at-bats. It's, hey, let's change your swing up. Let's move your hands here. Let's move them a little bit lower.
Right.
Let's move them higher.
It's the little nuanced things.
It's a little nuance that maybe he sees the field in a different way if he is positioned somewhere and he starts getting involved more and things start to happen more naturally in that position. But I think you're right. It's like a small adjustment like that could spark it. It's just finding whatever that is.
Yeah, it's just basically telling him, hey, be more aggressive.
Yep.
Or when you point to the film of like why he's playing the balls backward and not forward, well then it's, and this is on the coaching staff, which there's an excellent one that they have at the club, to figure out, okay, what are the little things that you could do better? And how can they lead to shot creating, goal creating actions? Because that player is still there. And I think that's what everybody's trying to come to grips with the entire squad, is like, these players are still very good. Like, you saw, I think it was last night, I forget who was, it might have been Stu Holden on Fox, saying, like, don't count out the Union, like, they'll still be in contention, all that kind of stuff. And look, they will. They'll still be in the mix of the Eastern Conference. But I think the issue where things lie is now, well, we're just the same talking points over and over and over again, and Jim Curtin's going to go up to the podium every week and be like, well, our record over the last 5 years, this is what we do at home, yada, yada, yada. And nobody wants to hear it because we've heard it before. And like, we've heard all the things about rotation. Like, the press conferences have gotten incredibly boring and very little information from them because, like, we're literally just asking the same thing, and Jim is telling you the same exact thing. And, yeah, there's two starting caliber right backs, the midfield, yada, yada, yada. Ty Barabo sucks. Chris Donovan's behind Marcus Anderson. Like, that's just where it is. But when you now have a team that gets built up this depth supposedly as, like, a years-long project, and you failed last year, and it's very clear that you failed last year with the majority of your offseason signings, that now has a trickle-down effect because some of the homegrown guys that you maybe weren't expecting to play or you think are a year or two away aren't ready to take the next step. And it really is when you have this model of business that the Union have. And by the way, Sugarman's not selling. That's just the reality. I think the only way you get removed as a sports owner is you die, you're involved in a horrific scandal, or like, or somebody with like $1 trillion comes in and wants to buy your team, and you willingly agree to it, right?
Yes.
And I saw people if you want to protest the ownership, sure, absolutely. I will say though, things were way, way more dire with this franchise when the Nick Sakevich coffin came out. Like, I think we need to pump the brakes on that level of pro. Like, if you don't want to buy concessions and you don't want to support the ownership group because it feeds them money, sure, that's fine. Like, you're right. But do I think it should go to that far of the Sakevich coffin? No, because I don't think some people who may be new to the fan base realize just like how dire things were, how poor things were at this club a decade ago. Like, leaps and bounds different from that time to now. Now, it really isn't remotely close. Frustration is there for sure, but we're frustrated about, you know, completely different issues of higher magnitude and performance. It's frustrating, but I think you have to point the finger higher up, right? I mean, Jim Curtin has
like squeezed everything he can out of it.
And he's very so subtly said the same things if you listen closely, right?
Oh, the entire team has said things. Not Andre Blake, not so subtly, has said. It's vocal about it.
So, like, what? I mean, it's all about right now what you do with your parts, right? And getting through.
Well, I'll ask this because this is a team the Corps has been around for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and if you're around for 3 years with something, you do it over and over again, mm-hmm. sometimes teams are going to figure it out. I do a lot of sports cross-sports analogies. I don't know why. But Patrick Mahomes got figured out. Remember, he had to evolve. Andy Reid, year 20-something in his career, had to evolve. The Chiefs offense, and so did Mahomes.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, to me, the Union have to evolve, but I guess my question to you, Joe, is, do they have the capability to evolve? What would that even look like?
Well, they're
because
trying.
They still do a lot of the same things they've done 3 years ago and 3 seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now it feels like there's going to need to be some type of evolution of this team. I don't know how far, how wide that evolution needs to be, how far spread that evolution needs to be throughout the entire team.
Yeah.
But it does seem like something is going to have to change. A lineup change, I don't know. Again, they don't have a lot of depth. Formation change, a philosophy change, whatever it is. I don't know what that change is, and I'm just spitballing out here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a team that does feel like it's going to need to evolve at some point.
Well, they want to. It's just they've gotten...
Right, and that might be a point.
Right. Yeah. Like, the desire to evolve is there.
Okay. Yep.
But the personnel to help you evolve...
That's what I was worried about.
...is all gone.
Yeah, that's,
like
that's
the personnel about. That you signed to evolve is gone after a year.
It's almost like you have already used all these guys in the best roles possible, and it's hard to move them around into different... They are so very good in their specific roles.
Yeah.
I guess it feels like.
But also, then, they need to be complemented more by the supporting pieces.
Yep. Okay.
Like, I think that's where it ends. I think, now, early on, looks like Marcus Anderson's a very nice piece. But is he a winger or is he a goal scorer? Because that's a big thing to specify. With, we haven't seen any of the strikers. You guys know how that is shaking out right now. I don't have to reiterate it. Jesus Bueno, Quinn Sullivan, Alejandro Bedoya, you have Leon Flock when he gets back. You have that mixture in midfield, but we already know what that variation looks like. We already know what three at the back looks like. We already know what the difference between Baizo and Harrio, which there isn't much in terms of overall quality now. There really isn't.
Nope.
We know what that looks like. And we know one of them, Harrio, can flip over to the left pretty easily. So... I mean, what do you do, right? You can't just go out in the market on March 13th. Like, you're with your pieces that you have until the summer.
You can't find another Carranza March 13th?
No, I think Inter Miami is roster compliant. Although, contrary to every Twitter response in the world, they are not, even though they probably are at this point. And everyone will tell you they are, but again, it's because everybody hates Miami. You kind of have to wait to the summer at this point, and everybody's going to be gone the summer. You got Copa, you got Euros, you got Olympics. Like, that's why the next few months are so important. And I'm not going to sit here and say, if you go out to Austin and bludgeon them, that everything's going to be okay, because you should do that. You should get a point out of Portland, come home and beat Minnesota. And some people will say, maybe internally with the club, hey, look what we have. Like, we're still pretty good. But does it get you to the final eight of Champions Cup? Probably not. So it's, the expectations are wildly different than they've ever been. And when you don't live up to them, yeah, everybody's going to come at you. And how you deal with that pressure and how you, I guess, evolve from that is what we're going to see over the next few months before everybody goes different ways for these tournaments. Like, I think this next, start the clock now, between now and June 1st. Go get as many points as you can and give yourself that buffer while also developing some guys into roles and evolve with what you have. That's really all you can do. You got to group, regroup. Yeah, last
And there's
night.
Been some of that. It's not like they've been completely missing that.
They're trying.
I think Quinn Sullivan's a good example of somebody that has absolutely taken a leap this year.
Right, but when you have... Ideally, you want to have one or two Quinn Sullivans or Jesus Buenos
right.
to add to your variation in offseason signings. And when you're a team with very little budget and you're just taking shots on young guys from these off-beaten leagues that no one's ever heard of, like, that's what you're doing here. And if it works, it works. And you get applauded for it, and it's worked a ton with Ernst Tanner. But when it fails, and it's failed repeatedly now,
it looks cheap.
Yeah. It looks cheap, but it also exposes the depth in your squad and the evolution of your squad. And I think that's where we're at. It's kind of a...
Because when it works the way they do, the Moneyball thing, I mean, it looks genius when you do it.
Right. It was amazing. It was amazing 2 years ago.
But when it doesn't happen, you're the Oakland Athletics.
Yeah.
Which you're not a team featured in a book called Moneyball
right.
and applauded for being able to field a roster of players nobody really knew about, cared about, and all of a sudden those guys are all-star players and they're getting you into 100-win seasons.
And I will say that the opinion of the team is still very high across the league.
It is. It's still very high because they swung and hit on so many great players already.
Like I hate to use the X teams would kill for this, but you think the Chicago Fire and LA Galaxy wouldn't kill to discover
Kai
Wagner?
But also, I can't see that the frustrations aren't valid because they've reached the ceiling.
Yeah.
And that it doesn't feel like they're going to get through until something, and like we're talking about,
an
evolution happens.
Yeah.
But you got to get somebody, it looks like. That player needed to arrive, and it never happened. And so it just feels like, okay, we're stagnant in this spot, and it just feels like, and the frustration comes in, there's just no way of getting out of this.
Yeah.
No way of getting out of it.
Well, the one thing I would say is if you're going to do that, and if you're going to stick to your guns, maybe instead of finding like a teenage center back or a teenage player from South America and Africa and claiming, well, we got to the market first, maybe that extra couple thousand goes to a 20-year-old, 21-year-old, who may not be with you long-term, may not be with you 6-7 years, but you can get 2-3 quality years out of them instead of playing this hope and wait game. Like, Jesus Buenos are going to happen, but they're the exception to the rule. And we've seen that. I mean, Orovich, Bassa, Macana might be down that path if he doesn't play much. Like, there are clear examples of guys that have come here and just have not been good enough. And when you have a few of those and they add up, it's a tough one.
So I would go to some of the questions, but a lot of the comments and questions I'm seeing, I feel like that's what the pod was all about.
Right,
the run it back attitude that people are frustrated with.
Yeah.
Why wasn't there something new? Why wasn't there change? And, you know, I think the only silver lining I can give to this is there are really quality players on this squad. They are going to finish, what, top four, top five in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah,
chance to finish better, but I think that's a realistic area for them to be in.
For
top
sure.
four, top five in the Eastern Conference. And they're solid enough on the back line and can get enough scoring at times that they can make a run in the playoffs still. You know, they can still, why can't they get a couple of wins
in the MLS playoffs? I will say that the real crossroads is a potential Carranza sale.
Well, that would be, yeah. Well, that'd be
but,
also.
We're going to talk about that for months upon months at this point, but what I will say with that is, I mean, look at the way the global market is for transfers. I mean, he's got the profile, right, of a guy that can be a double-digit scorer in Europe. But he's not just going to go with the first team that offers X million, right? If that was the case, he would have been off to Werder Bremen at the end of the August transfer window. Like, let's be honest, like that. He would have chased that, and who knows how that would have gone. But I think with transfers, they're way more complex than some people may think. Like, there's the union perspective. There's the European club perspective. But most importantly, there's the player's perspective. And, like, the player's personal wants and needs. And then the clubs in Europe have the money, or are they willing to take chances on players that are known quantities? Like, there are so many complexities to this web of, will Julian Carranza be sold? I mean, perfect example. So I think he's good enough to play in the Premier League. I think he's probably good enough to play on one of the teams that comes up, that gets promoted. So we use Leicester as an example. Leicester doesn't have a need for him. Like, they signed young guys last year thinking we're going to be here in for the long haul and we're going to stay up, and that's the case. Like, why would you go after Carranza when you have a Patson Daka? Or if you're Leeds, yeah, maybe they go after him, but is he at a higher level of a Bamford or Joel Perreault? Like, I don't know. Or if Southampton has strikers, and Southampton's probably not going to spend a ton offensively if they have that. I'm just speculating. I don't really know. But, like, you have to look at that. Like, if that's the level, or if it's the Bundesliga, where do I fit in this whole thing? Am I going to be your starting number nine? Because that's what he wants. Like, he's not going to go anywhere to be backup. And quite frankly, I think it would probably be insulting if he went to the championship. Like, I think he could play in one of the big five leagues. So where do you fit in this whole global complex web? And on top of that, will teams be tighter budgeted because of just the financial state of everything in Europe? I don't know. It's a whole complex web, and
I hope it's so complex that it doesn't get resolved and he stays.
That the union, hey, look, if the union, here's your big signal of intent here. If that is the case, if the market isn't great in the summer, and who knows, it's transfer business. You see how these things operate, but who knows? But if you're signaling intent, I don't know. Do you offer the big money contract to Carranza and see if he stays?
Ooh. Is that on the table?
I mean, it's got to be on the table until it's not, right? No, I think the assumption is he goes to Europe and we're all okay with that. And you celebrate that for the player because he's worked so hard, and the hand he was dealt in Miami was so awful. The fact that he was able to resurrect himself from that situation and become a double-digit scorer and so consistent in MLS and be ready to take that next step is fantastic. So you celebrate the move if it happens. But if you're the union and you're Ernst Tanner, if you've been around the block for decades at this point, and you kind of see where the market's going to go in the summer, and you think the best option for Carranza is to stay in MLS, throw the bag at him.
Throw the bag at him.
That's a statement of intent, too.
Also, I mean, that's something. You're not getting a new player. I think this fan base wants somebody new, but I think that shows initiative, even to throw money at somebody like Carranza. I feel like that would help not ease any and all worries.
It does. No, it doesn't.
It shows initiative, though, right. which I would appreciate. I think there'd be appreciation for that.
Look, until it's not on the table, I think you have to consider it.
Yeah.
Again, not saying that's going to happen, but
it's probably not.
Probably not, but like,
we can't have nice things.
No.
I'm just kidding.
And he's a 23-year-old Argentinian striker. And if he puts up numbers,
There's going to be demand
for him because of his profile, where he's from, the type of player he is. Like, that's very attractive to European clubs. But if the market ends up being crappy and you want to show your fan base some statement of intent, maybe that's the way to do it to start. I don't know. That's just me spitballing at ideas and knowing that if we're going to claim the market is awful.
Yeah.
And teams in the mid-tier don't have money.
So let's go to another question, because obviously that was part of running back and what's it like moving forward. But also, a good question in here, and I guess we talked about this with the evolution, but let's specifically talk formations. You know, somebody said, is it time for three in the back? What other formations are options? And I guess we talked about that a bit with the lack of depth and the personnel that they have. It doesn't seem like there are many options from what they've already tried.
Well, I mean, everybody has to be healthy.
Good point as well.
I mean, ideally, you would have thrown the three at the back out there last night, right? I thought Curtin was going to try to, but if you don't think Elliott's 100%, if you want to save him in case Lesnes isn't 100%, like, not saying they're playing with injuries, but Elliott's not at 100% game fitness yet because he was hurt in preseason, and they're working him back. He's very close, but they're working him back there, and you're not going to throw Nathan Harrell at center back in Mexico.
No.
As well as he played, you're not going to do that. That's kind of coaching malpractice. So, yeah, I think there's ways to do it, but you also can't sacrifice your principles. Like, it's not going to be a drastic change, but I think playing with two tens is wasteful because what they tried to do against Pachuca was put Sullivan and Gazdag in those 10 spots, but then drift the outside, especially Sullivan, to prevent what Pachuca did down the left side. And maybe that works against a less effective MLS team. Maybe that works against an Austin because they're not good. I don't know. But so far, the results on that aren't great. So I think there's limitations to what you can do. But what you can do with the setups you have is make yourself very good at those specific things. I think that's what they have to focus on. And it sounds very cliche, but you gotta keep it simple. You gotta do the little things right and build on that. And
it's another good way of.
And how many times have we heard Jim Curtin say that while the Union are in the middle of a slump too? Like, I'm not preaching any new things that the Union are talking about. Yeah, they're obviously pissed off. They lost 6-0. Like, Jim was very despondent last night in the press conference. You could tell he didn't want to answer anybody's questions. And I get it. Yeah, I think that's kind of where you start the fixes. You say, hey, we just held Pachuca to a scoreless draw a week ago.
Yeah, not that far removed
right.
from that. Yeah.
That still happened.
And they didn't have Carranza in that game.
Yes. Now, the 6-0 also happened.
Yeah, it did.
You also
it
have
did.
To pay attention to that. But it's not like this team has played like the 29th best team in Major League Soccer this year either. But you want that high standard to be reestablished, and you want that evolution there, and you want all the things that we've been promised and they haven't been delivered on
yep.
in a year and a half of this claimed evolution of this starting 11 core group.
So I like that. I think that's a good stopping point here for the podcast. And I will shout out, because we didn't get the specific questions, because I think we just answered, they were all general questions of what we were going to talk about anyway. So shout out to # Save the Open Cup. Drew, shout out to Kyle, Connor D, Gus, Evan, Brian, Vincent, Marcus, Gracie, and Stacy for all of the questions sending in to the pod.
And to everyone through the Substack as well. I appreciate the responses. Pretty much the same to what we've gotten on Twitter. And I do want to send some appreciation out to everyone. Reached a very important threshold with the Substack over the off season. So thank you to everyone that has subscribed, will subscribe, will refer any and anyone to subscribe. It is greatly appreciated, and your kind words on everything that's written and said, and even with us coming back to, or not coming back, we're just podcasting again, but to see some of you guys say that we're glad you guys are revving up the podcast again. We greatly appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Those words do not get lost on either of us every time we
season
we see
crept
like
up
that.
On us.
We have a lot of things going
yes,
on. We are
yes,
two
we
very big. We're podcasting this literally right before producing the Villanova basketball game in the Big East tournament. Like,
we found time, though, and we're going to find more time.
We
I
are.
Can promise you that.
The good news is Villanova probably has like 3 games left in the basketball season, if that.
So unionsoccerblog.substack.com is where you can subscribe. You can also follow us at Union Soccer Pod. You can follow Joe Tanzi at JTanzi90. And you can follow me, John Jansen, at JJansen34. That is it. And thank you for tuning in to the Union Soccer Podcast.